Happy Tuesday, everyone. The Ira Kaufman Podcast is on, presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is here, Raymond James Stadium. We really like to call it the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, Ira. I don't even know if we could call it the Den of Depression anymore, but you are looking good.
I believe Leek still called it the Den of Depression today in a tweet. I believe he did.
Well, it still is.
Yes, sir.
The Bucks have to have a winning record at home, but they're on their way. We're going to be talking about this stout Buck win today and so much more. Ira, it is good to see you. Great, epic appearance on Fox 13 this morning. I want to bring that up later. How are you?
I'm sour. And why am I sour? Because I'm now two games behind Nesbitt in the Buck prediction pool.
I thought it was the sauce you ate with the chicken tenders.
No, we got to give Nesbitt his props. He picked the Bucks even though they were underdogs. And you and I went with the Panthers. I wouldn't put it past Nesbitt to pick the Bucks against the Saints next week. And he might win that one. He's 9-3, Lee. You got to give it up for a man who's 9-3.
Yeah, I'm not going to catch him.
He's got the pulse of this team over there.
He does.
He might have it more than Dirk Cutter. Not give credit.
What, does he have the pulse of Devontae Bond, too?
Well done, Nesbitt. Well done.
All right, thank you very much, Ira. I appreciate that. Yes, I did pick the Bucks to win 24-23. That makes me 9-3 on the year. Lee is 6-6. You are 7-5. So it's tough sledding, Ira. But you know what? Let's go right to this, because now at 5-7, the Bucks are going to be in that little at the bottom of those little lists of playoff possibilities.
On the fringe category, yes.
On the fringe on all those TV shows that we've been watching. And, of course, after Monday night's big game, we're recording before that. But for the NFC playoff chase, Eagles against the Redskins, a huge game for the Bucks, who own the tiebreaker against the Eagles but don't have it against the Redskins. When Ryan Fitzpatrick put up 3 freaking points despite 500.
Even the fact, Steve, that I asked you to check on the NFC standings, that's significant. That is, right there. Right there, that tells you that the Bucks are making their move right now.
You're right, Ira. The Bucks are out of last place.
And they're out of last place.
Buccaneers Cove, as Lee dubbed it so aptly and quite humorously last year. This win, Ira, I know it's sunk in for you a little bit. You were around Cutter, who had, I don't know if you want to share what Cutter said to you after the game, or probably not. It's not for a family podcast. Where do you see the state of this team right now? And, of course, Jameis Winston, back-to-back turnover-free games. He hasn't done that since early last season.
All right, a couple of points I want to make. Lee, they're 4-2 at home. That's number one. Not bad. 4-2 at home. Once again, we are reminded how much better, for whatever reason, this defense plays at home. The disparity is alarming. The secondary guys ended up with their hands on the ball, but the game was won up front. This game was all about the Bucks' defensive line, in my opinion. Mm. They were the best unit on the field. They were directly responsible for at least half of those picks, if not more. Every time I looked at Newton, he was throwing off his back foot. He couldn't step up. Guys were wrapping him underneath. 2 great sacks off linebacker blitzes, which we haven't seen. Levante came out of nowhere. Minter came out of nowhere. Outstanding. McCoy played it a heck of a game. I also want to end it with this one. This was their best game since Philly, week 2. Considering the opponent, this was their best performance. And let's face it, they're playing better defense under Duffner. You got to give the man a little credit.
Well, not just that. And I wrote a story over the weekend for JoeBucksFan.com. And Friday, I talked to John Hoke, the defensive backs coach. Much maligned.
Oh, so you got a couple of questions in with Hoke, so to speak.
I squeezed 3 questions in, believe it or not. Got one under the wire. But at any rate, much maligned. And I was part of the maligning. You know, I said this guy can't develop cornerbacks, rookie corners, et cetera, et cetera. At any rate, I asked myself, why is it the defense is playing better? Is it that the rookies, and he didn't have access to rookies today because MJ Stewart was out, Carlton Davis was out. I said, is it the fact that the rookies are starting to learn what is expected of them? Or have you finally found a right mix of players to play as a team and getting the job done? And he said a little bit of both. And I think there's some validity to that they may have found the right mix of players, you know. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's only, I mean, granted, Duffner, they're getting better results for Duffner. They're getting better results. There's no question about that, especially defensive line. But the 2 key plays I thought was very interesting, you pointed them out, was the sack blitzes by Minter early and not long after that. Levante Dade. When's the last time Levante Dade had a sack?
And we know in the past he's been effective in that
role. And I asked Devontae Bond, those two sack blitzes, I said, maybe it's just me, but it seemed like that was a tone setter. I mean, right off the bat, you put Newton on the ground. Not an easy feat. You put him on the ground twice with linebacker blitzes, which you guys don't normally do. And he said, you know, as a team, we always talk about fast starts. Well, we wanted to have a fast start with a defense. That was a fast start.
I never thought that Newton looked particularly comfortable in this game. And that's a credit to the defensive line. They whipped Carolina's front all day long, Steve.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating phenomenon what's going on here, Sage, on so many levels. This Buccaneers season has been probably more interesting than any other that I can remember. Interesting also means painful for fans, but it's fascinating. The defensive line, before this game, Dirk Koetter talked about this Friday on his radio show. I almost wet my pants and drove off the road. Okay? He leaked, if you will, that the Buccaneers, over the last six games, had 20 sacks, and that ranks second in the NFL over the last six games, 20 sacks. Now, against the Panthers, they had four. So there's a good chance that the Bucs over the last seven games have more sacks than any damn team in the NFL.
So that's 24-7,
yeah,
which is a big, big total if you could keep it up all year. Big total.
It's tremendous.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Noah Spence didn't have a sack.
No.
Who would have thought that? If the Bucs had that many sacks.
Oh, you mean on the season. Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought that the Bucs would have, in a span of 7 weeks, what, 24 sacks, and none would be from Noah Spence, even though he's healthy?
Sure, yeah. I mean, before the season, you would have thought he would have been in that mix if they were really racking up that many. And, of course, Carl Nassib wasn't even here. But here's the thing, Ira. The Bucs defensive line, I talked to Vinnie Curry about it, who had a sack and is getting back healthy. And I asked him, look, man, what's going on here? This defense was awful, and now it's actually, like, almost good. And he said, you know, on the defensive line, he'd only speak for the defensive line. He said, look, Spicer and Buckner, the coaches on the defensive line, he said, these guys are killing us, relentless, nonstop, drilling us. He said it took a little time early, and now we're there. So he's, you know, very encouraged. He likes the rotation, and this is what Jason Light envisioned, was leading from the defensive line, and here they go.
And relentless is a word that Dirk Koetter used on Sunday after the game on the D-line. Relentless. They won this game. I mean, the offense was okay. They didn't run the ball.
They didn't do anything in the second half.
Jameis played very well because he was their leading rusher. He's the only guy that ran the ball well. The only guy.
Fantastic game by Jameis.
You think so?
Oh, fantastic.
And I want to say this right now, and I think I tweeted it Sunday, and I think it's worth saying again. For a guy who was a little bit maligned coming out of FSU because he ran a 4.98 in the combine, he's slow, he's not mobile. Guys, he moves very well.
For his size, yeah.
He's not fast, but he's got good feet. And he's not a bad athlete for a big man, which he is. The guy is phenomenal about buying himself extra time, Lee. And that pass to Godwin in the right corner, that's one of the Buck highlights of the season. Mm-hmm. Beautiful play by Winston.
And by the way, Jameis is 40 in the combine coming out of college. Exactly the same as everybody thought fast Josh Freeman was.
Okay.
It's the exact same 40.
I think it was a cut below 5 seconds, which is not a good time.
Yeah, 4.9.
Yeah, it was
And people thought Freeman was fast, and it's the same people who thought Freeman was fast. Oh, Jameis is slow. Well, he ran the same 40. He ran the exact same 40. Elizabeth's looking up the time. I want to say it's 4.9.
But
I thought it was Glennon who ran the 4.9. I'm going to check.
It's possible.
I think Lee's right. I think it was a crack below 5. I think it was closer to 5 than 4.9. Anyway, game after game, we see him buying time. Lee, he does it very, very well. Now,
he has sometimes, to with Benenock.
By the way, this offensive line, they're just so inconsistent.
They are.
You know, and I keep special attention because I got Peyton Barber in my fantasy league. The guy finally breaks through for a 30-yarder.
Penalty.
There's a flag.
Yeah.
I think that one was on break. But most of the time, Barber's got nowhere to go. Absolutely nowhere to go. Now, Steve loves it because he dropped Barber from his fantasy team. and I picked him up. Now, he did get a touchdown. He did get
Who that. Was it? That was
and he would have had another one, except for that crazy play on the goal line, which a lot of us still think he scored a touchdown.
Was it Barber that got a huge run up the middle early in the game that Jensen and Marpet parted the Red Sea? I mean, he had a huge hole up the middle. Had a big gain. I think that was Barber.
I don't know.
Might have been in first possession of the game.
It might have been, but I can't believe there wasn't a flag. By the way, can I get a little credit? Throw the ball down the field, and you're going to get a flag. Can I get some love over there, Stephen?
Ira.
How many years have I been saying this?
Ira.
You're going to get the flag, people. You're going to get it.
Ira, didn't you not hear the whole press box start calling you Sage because I said out loud you've been screaming for that for 2 years?
Cummings won't call me Sage.
Well, he said it, didn't he?
I don't know. I think he said it sarcastically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was being sarcastic for some reason. Roy Cummings, your former colleague, thinks that you're no Sage of anything. And I
mocked you for covering his lightning.
You got to throw five deep balls, Stevie. How many times can I say it?
Lee was on the money. Ira, you were on the money. And, you know, it's fun to watch this stuff. Jamison Freeman, same combine time. Glennon had them both beat. But you know, on the field, Jameis's his elusivity has been incredible, and I thought this was one of his best games. 20 for 30, couple of touchdowns, and smart running. He's averaging this year over 5 yards a rush,
nice.
Which is very strong. It's his best ever, so he's clearly improved there. And I think I was looking it up earlier. I think he's like 8th in the NFL among starters who have had more than 30 rushes as far as average per carry. So he's getting better. And Lee,
unlike last week, you can't point to a fumble and two potential picks. There might have been one ball that might have been picked off.
To God, when he said, James said, yeah.
But that's pretty close to a flawless game.
Well, you know what impressed me? And I don't know if you saw the replay or not, but I saw it live, and the replay showed it clearly. In the second quarter, James is running down close to the goal line. And when linebackers started compressing on him, for lack of a better term, collapsing on him because obviously he ran past the line of scrimmage, he immediately covered up the ball with two hands. Immediately.
My meter's up to 90%, Steve. My Jameis meter.
Jameis return meter?
90.
Yeah, I think at this point, it's got to be, I think 90 is fair. You know, we're not rooting for setbacks,
right.
But I think that's a good number. We had talked about that in previous podcasts. Yeah, you know, after Rondé Barber said to you 70% shot that Jameis comes back.
That was before last week's game.
Can we bring up the elephant in the room?
Go ahead.
Bobo Wilson. When's the last time Jameis threw a pass to Bobo Wilson in the game? Last year, he was on the practice squad. He gets promoted. Jameis threw a bomb to him, like 40 yards in the end zone. Ball was on target. He drew an interference call. Ball was on target. Everybody and their brother screaming, but Jameis and DeSean Jackson, Jameis and DeSean Jackson. Guy comes again. The guy just got promoted Friday from the practice squad. First time he saw a game, preseason maybe. And Jameis had no problem. Jameis has no problem with Mike Evans. I can go down the list. He didn't have problems with Dante Dye, the misplaced Calgary Stampeder. Didn't have any problems with Freddie Martino and his band of renown. Only DeSean Jackson. So, you know, come on, people, do a little math here. If there's only one problem with one receiver and he's got no problems with 8 or 9 receivers,
understood.
There might be an issue with that one receiver.
And we saw another example today, further evidence of why, I'm going to only speak for myself, why DeSean Jackson is not going to be on this team next year. And the number one reason, Chris Godwin's ready to move into that spot. We saw it again today. The guy's a darn good player, Chris Godwin. He's not Mike Evans. He doesn't claim to be, but he'd be a darn good number two, and Humphreys keeps making plays. They don't lack for weapons. They didn't miss DeSean Jackson one bit today, Steve.
Has DeSean Jackson played his last game in
Denver? I believe he has. I believe he's played his last game for the Bucs.
You think they're going to put him on IR, or they're just going to shelve him? Healthy scratch.
Okay, I think he'll probably go on IR.
Well,
it happens all the time.
We'll find out. I think it really will probably come down to what DeSean Jackson's agent is telling him the market is for him, and does he need to show anything else this year?
Why risk an injury down the stretch?
Maybe they feel he needs to show something more this year. I don't know. But DeSean Jackson will be in the league next year.
Yes.
We all know that.
Yes.
He won't be on this team. And hopefully he finds a better fit. But I hope that if he is back and ready, that Dirk Cutter puts his foot down and says, you know what? It's Chris Godwin's time to move into that number two. He's shown everybody everything he needs to know. And that Cutter says, hey, D-Jack, if you're the team player you think you are, you're going to deal with this and return a punt, you know, and take fewer reps at receiver, maybe take a handoff here and there. So I don't know. We'll see. But we won't focus on him. We'll see if he's coming back. We'll know later this week, I'm sure, once we see who's practicing.
You know, guys, Carolina's not playing good football.
No, they're not playing well,
Steve. That's 4 in a row. Last time we saw them, they were 6-2. After beating the Bucs. This is a team that's a notch below the Saints. They're a playoff team. They're 6-6. They needed to win. Nobody can say Carolina overlooked the Bucs. That's nonsense.
Yeah.
Bucs went out, outplayed them, and deserve to win this game, Lee.
Newton had three picks, right?
Four.
Four. Will Ron Rivera bench him?
Absolutely not.
Thank you.
Absolutely not. He did not look good.
Let's stick with this defense and some of the broader ramifications here. They're thriving under Duffner. It's another thing I talked to Vinnie Curry about, and it's obvious, right?
Don't forget even the Washington game, Steve. Defense played well.
No, it's been a strong run since Duffner took over. It's not great. Nobody's going to call the Bucs defense great.
And not particularly good against the Giants, Steve. Not against the Giants.
No, but overall, he took dog crap and turned it into something reasonable. And
is there such a thing as reasonable dog crap?
Steve just came up with that.
It's a lot better and more consistent pass rush. I just explained this 7-week run now of sack numbers, but the pass rush itself even looks better. But forget about this. Does the success of Duffner, does that reflect terribly on Dirk Koetter and, one, his decision to bring back Mike Smith after being last in the NFL? Number two, his decision to not fire Mike Smith before the bye week, when it made a lot of sense to go into the bye with a new coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm really going to jump on Koetter, which I don't mind doing, although the team's playing well for him right now, they haven't quit on him, certainly.
No.
I would have canned Smith at the bye week. I think in retrospect that was a mistake, and give them 2 weeks to implement some new schemes, new ideas about that defense. He didn't do it. They went out. I believe the game was the Atlanta game. And they gave up 3 touchdowns on the first 3 drives by the Falcons. That was it for Mike Smith. He was done, but it might have cost them that game.
Oh, yeah.
Which, in retrospect, now, at 5-7, I mean, who knows what's going on?
Yeah.
What might have been?
I'm right now.
So, if you're going to can Smith, you can him at the bye week, and Koetter didn't do it.
I know we've gone over this subject before. I just don't remember what we all said. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but did you not say, or someone, maybe it wasn't you, the Smith firing may have come from above?
I believe it was urged from above because...
And when I say above...
I think Koetter needed a little goading to do it. He didn't want to do it on a personal basis. Those guys are thick as thieves, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. I mean, they're very tight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go back a long, long way to Jacksonville, right?
Oh, before,
Atlanta, Koetter didn't want to fire Mike Smith, Steve, but I think he realized that it was the right move for the franchise with a little urging from up above.
Yes. If I remember correctly, didn't Koetter also say a week before Mike Smith, or 2 weeks before Mike Smith, sorry, before the bye week, Koetter was asked point blank, are you going to remove Mike Smith? And didn't he say something to the effect of, well, what good will that do?
That was his answer. Who are you going to put in there?
Yeah.
Obviously, he changed his tune after the Atlanta game. Steve, one quick point about what Lee was talking about with that young secondary.
Take your time, Sage.
Part of it could be, guys, that these young guys, they got nothing to lose. They're trying to make a statement, and you don't make a statement with a 9-yard cushion on 3rd and 5. You make a statement by closing in. That's the one thing, Lee, besides the enhanced pass rush, that jumps out at me under Duffner. The passes are contested.
Mm-hmm.
Just because a guy caught the ball, you don't rip the defense. But if a guy catches the ball with nobody in the area code, that's on the defense, mostly on the scheme, in my opinion. You haven't seen that often in the last month. That's what I like the most. Passes are contested, and that 73% completion rate, that's starting to go down.
Oh, yeah.
It was 77. It might be 70 after this game. 77% was absolutely absurd.
Oh.
We've never seen anything. And Steve, the third down defense, much improved. 1-for-8 last year week, and I believe the first half they were 0-for-3. So that's a 1-in-11 span. That's outstanding third down defense, guys.
All right, Ira, now the Koetter watch, because all across the NFL, hot seat talk and replacements and all that stuff, we're in December now.
A guy wrote his obit this weekend in Green Bay.
McCarthy.
To lose to Arizona at home. It's unthinkable.
When you were on the fringe of the playoff race,
crazy stuff. And now the Bucs have a better record than
in Green Bay.
Yeah,
oh
yeah.
My. Oh
and it was snowing.
Lambeau.
Yeah. It was snowing.
My. Arizona. I think they're the worst team in the league.
They're pretty awful.
Number 32.
Yeah, Josh Rosen. Where did he go to school? Not exactly a cold weather city.
Yeah, Los Angeles.
So anyway, that time of year, Koetter's 5-7. You've said 9-7 or get out of here. And now that's just you, and you are the sage of Tampa Bay sports. But Team Glazer might have a different view. Team Glazer might say, hey, if we can win 3 out of 4 here, we're sold. We're not going to break up the band that fast.
I might have to soften a little bit if they win 3 out of the next 4. But I might have to.
Do you think there's any chance Cutter survives here if they win 2 out of the next 4? And I'm saying that, let's look at it this way, Ira. They've got the, let's say they lose to the Saints. Let's say they beat the Cow, they lose to the Ravens, and then they beat the Cowboys and beat Atlanta to close 7-9. Well, is that enough?
Lee, to me, you still got to look at the big picture, and that means 7-9 after a 2-0 start that nobody envisioned. Nobody envisioned a 2-0 start. They weren't buried. See, if you get buried early and then you finish strong, you got something to say. When you start 2-0 and you finish 7-9, that's a hard case to make, Lee, in my opinion. It's a hard case.
Did they start 3-1?
No, they did not start
2-2.
But 2-0 with two big wins coming out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know, and then you had Winston coming back and everything looked good. And then you had that long, and I mean long, lull. Where they lost, was it 7 out of 8?
We're 5-7. They fell to,
I believe it was 7 out of 8.
3-7. So it was 7 out of 8.
Yeah. You lose 7 out of 8, Lee. Tough to come out of that.
Well, what also looks bad for Cutter, we may never know the full story. When he benched Jameis, they went 0-3 with Fitzpatrick. With Jameis back in the lineup, or with Jameis in the lineup, coming from his suspension, aren't they 3-4 in his starts?
They were 0-5 with Fitzpatrick. They're 3-2 with Jameis. That's after winning the first 2 games.
Last 4.
When Jameis was available, they went 0-5 with Fitzpatrick.
And I still think they put Jameis in a week too late. I would have put him in against the Giants. And who knows, you might have won that Giants game and not dug yourself a big early hole like Fitzpatrick.
They clearly Cutter panicked on that move, and Monken kind of backed it up saying they were trying to save jobs. And that's just another
thing. You got a healthy Winston, and Fitzpatrick's not playing well. You add those two things up, Winston has to play against the Giants. So I still don't understand that one.
So when the Glazers are deciding if Cutter should stay or not, provided that he has a strong finish, that's going to be a big negative. The way they're playing, that might have cost him a wild card. That very well could have cost him a wild card. Why did you
7-9 is a tough pill to swallow, Steve.
All right. So the Sage meter says 8-8, in or out for Cutter?
At least I'm listening to his case.
All right.
I'm listening.
At 8-8, you're listening.
I'm listening.
I think a lot of Bucks fans would listen as well. We'll see.
Now, that means you went 5-1 down the stretch. You went 5-1 down the stretch.
No, you were 3-5.
So you were 3-7.
You were 3-7.
You were 3-7.
So
you went 5-1.
He's a good math guy.
That's right. Don't argue with me about math, Stephen. You've learned that.
And what did he do with that great math mind? He decided to be a sportsman.
But having said that, Steve, a lot of Buck fans still would want Cutter out of here. You've done the confidence meter. It'll bump up this week. It'll bump up.
Yeah, I mean, I would as well. I don't think he's the Super Bowl head coach, but that's me.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, the Tampa Bay Times had a story where they said they could see Jameis coming back next year. They could make a case for Cutter coming back next year. They can't see both coming back. They think that Cutter benched Jameis. That was the end of a relationship, that neither one of them can deal with each other any longer.
There might be a little truth to that. There might be. But if Jameis plays clean games like that,
he's back.
Who's Cutter to piss on that?
Well, it's the same old story that we dealt with before the season, right? It's like, if Jameis plays well and the offense is humming and they're winning games, what, are you going to throw Jameis a new offense and keep your fingers crossed? It's a tough spot for the Glazers.
It is. And don't forget, last year, Jameis played well down the stretch. They didn't win games, except for the last one, and they stuck with Cutter. Now, that was year 2 and only 1 year removed from 9-7. Mm-hmm. I think the third year, if you go 7-9, I think it changes the dynamic.
You know what? Cutter said something Friday night on NFL Radio. And this sort of goes back to DeSean Jackson, but you kind of brought it up. Gil Brandt had asked him about, you know, is DeSean, when's he going to be back from an injury? And Cutter, I was at Cutter's press conference Friday. He didn't portray, you know, body language and things. It didn't sound like Jackson was long-term injury. He goes, he's out tomorrow. He's out Sunday. I don't know if he's going to be back when. But it didn't come across his body language, his tone of voice. Nothing suggested he may be done for the season, maybe done for 4 weeks, whatever. Friday night on NFL Radio, and Steve probably listened to the interview too, and I wrote this up on JoeBucksFan.com, his tune had changed. Now, mind you, about an hour after practice, Bobo Wilson got promoted, and that raised my antenna. Jackson's not supposed to be hurt so bad. What are you promoting this guy? It just screamed conspiracy. And then Cutter was on NFL radio later that night. His tone had changed. Gil Brandt asked him, when do you expect DeSean Jackson to come back? And he's like,
he was noncommittal, right?
He was very much noncommittal. He was like, well, Gil, that's a good question. I don't know when he's going to be back. And it's, whoa. And then on top of that, like I said, Bobo Wilson was promoted just a few hours prior to that interview. All kinds of red flags were going off in my head.
How many times at this time of year, in the last 5 or 8 years, have we seen Buckeyes all of a sudden get thrown onto IR and their season ends? And you say, wait a minute. That injury's not so bad. And for whatever reason, the guy's done. He's done for the year. That could very well happen at DeSean Jackson.
In that same that very same discussion about Jackson on NFL radio, Cutter told Gil Brandt, he said, well, Gil, you know, last year, end of the season, we didn't have DeSean Jackson either, and we probably played our best ball of the season.
That didn't sound good.
No, that didn't sound good.
That didn't sound good. DeSean Jackson's mother's not going to like that line.
All right, Sage, now the vehicle year is coming to an end, Ira. Makes things very exciting at EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com and EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Now, your podcast, Ira, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, these are the places to subscribe to the podcast.
Tuesday, Thursday, Stephen.
So you can get an alert when it pops. And, of course, you just keep track of JoeBucksFan.com. Follow Ira on Twitter at iKaufman76. Or us here at Joe Bucks Fan. Before we get into some important Buccaneers business, Ira, your appearance on Fox 13, Tailgate Sunday. Lee, you didn't
see... Boy, did you get a kick out of this one.
Oh, fantastic. Lee, you didn't see this.
I hope they put it on Facebook. Yeah, I was driving down here when it aired.
So I can't leave my house till I watch the Sage, right? It's just the way it is.
So near the end, they go over the... You make your case. You got to make your case.
You got to make your... toward the end, you got... On this show, they had pick your three biggest disappointments for the Bucs this season.
Right, that was make your case.
So Ira does number three. He finishes number three, and then number two is next.
Number three was turnover differential.
And
turnover
they put a... a little highlight on the screen, so you know what Ira's number two is, and he gives his spiel. Well, Ira finishes number three, and Ira, being a television diva, he doesn't have his words on the teleprompter for number two.
All of a sudden, I black out over there.
The teleprompter must have blacked out, so Ira finishes number three and says, can we get number two up on the screen, please?
Come on. Someone, and I think it was not enough production from the rookie class was my number two. because I said, have we seen Vita Vea before last week? Where's Ronald Jones? Kappa can't get on the field. Now Whitehead's done a nice job.
So rather than ad-lib his number two, Ira orders the producer.
Put it up on the screen?
And Steve got a kick. He almost fell off his couch.
And they flash to a wide shot immediately, and Scott Smith, the sports director.
And he's laughing.
He's laughing, and he's the host of the show. It was classic.
Somebody put up a number two graphic on the screen over there? That's classic TV over there.
Live television.
I got some classic social media for you. It comes from none other than Dr. Wank.
Ah, my man.
Yeah, it was like I wasn't listening for this.
He's killing Benenock, by the way. He kills Benenock.
Well, there's another offensive lineman he's killing.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't listening for this, okay? I only recognized two different times this happening. I didn't think it was a coincidence. I was told it was something else. Ronald Jones had a carry in the third quarter, and I think he lost a yard. I swore I heard boos. So, okay. Two plays later, he ran again. I think he either lost yards again or maybe he got another yard. The boos were louder, and I put that on Twitter. And people say, no, that was Luke Kuechly. I'm like, I didn't hear this all game long. I said, well, wait a minute. So people all of a sudden start yelling, Luke. On the very same plays that Ronald Jones doesn't carry for
quite a coincidence.
Yards. Yeah, and I maybe that's true. But I
what did the good doctor say about it?
Oh, he said he was booing, but it wasn't at Kuechly. It was at Donovan Smith. He said,
"Oh, Donovan Smith. Yeah, he's all over Donovan Smith.
Is that right?" So the good doctor said he was booing, but not at Ronald Jones.
Not a good day Sunday for the offensive lines. Not a particularly good day.
Donovan Smith had a bad day. At least a bad first half.
The run blocking is so inconsistent. It is so inconsistent.
Very inconsistent. Interesting. Cutter, when he was talking Friday before the game on his radio show, he called DeMar Dotson arguably the best pass blocking right tackle in the game. But I thought it was interesting that he defined it as pass blocking.
Okay.
And, Dotson didn't play today. Leonard Wester was in. They're just not connecting on the run game, but... Look, they move the ball. They score points. It's good enough. The offense, in some ways, really let down the defense a little bit today, made it too close. But we all agree. I do. Anyway, I know Ira does. That fumble at Peyton Barber, I don't understand how that was a fumble when his body's down. And it appeared he lost the ball after the ball broke the plane.
The ball looked like it broke the plane.
It had to be either a fumble that happened after he crossed the goal line or he was down. I don't know. I don't understand it. But, you know, that took seven off the board.
And it took six off my fantasy team.
And, yes, exactly. We went over that already.
Did you hear me screaming in the press room about that, Lee?
No, oh, I did not. Goodness.
All right, Ira, now let me throw this at you. We've already talked about Cutter. Jason Light. Let's look at Jason Light for a minute because we're 4 weeks now from Black Monday. 4 weeks, not even. It's really getting there. Now you look at Jason Light and all these guys out of nowhere.
He's good on the diamonds in the rough, Steve. He's good at it.
Andrew Adams coming in.
Adamant.
You know, Nassib. He's good at these guys.
And don't get me going on Nassib.
Adams. He played for the Giants the last 2 years, played 16 games last year, was on the street for 3 weeks after getting cut at a training camp this year. Jason Pierre-Paul had some good things to say about his ex-teammate after the game. But this guy comes in, and ever since he's been here, he's played more aggressive. It's almost as if, like, every time I watched Adams play before this, the little bit he's gotten in, it was like, wow, this guy hasn't been infected by Mike Smith telling him to play off receivers. He doesn't know how to do it, so that's good. And so you start this game with Adams and Ryan Smith as your starters. You got Whitehead and Isaiah Johnson at safety, and they can play ball. Now, I don't know if that's good for Jason Light or not. Did they have the wrong guys in initially? Did he misevaluate Conti and the other
and
corners?
Justin Evans. What does it mean about Justin Evans?
It's an interesting study how this season has gone for Light, Ronald Jones, but then there's Peyton Barber. You've got
Kappa can't get in with Benenach. You know, people are wondering what's going on there.
You know, you can't blame Light for the nonsense at quarterback. And now Jameis is 3-2 and seems like he's mastering this offense, 2 turnover-free games. I mean, Light doesn't coach, but
O.J. Howard was having a heck of a season.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Godwin, you know, a thriving 100 yards today, showed his speed as well.
Whitehead looks like a good pick. You know, I mean, there's some things to be said.
And then there's the kicker issue.
Yeah, the kicker issue is horrible, but if he does...
Santos may have resolved it.
If he does fix it with Santos, who's been perfect, I don't know. What do you think of Light, Ira?
Well, maybe we might get a clue by, he might be gone by then. I was going to say which additional guys get second contracts, the Quans. Wow. Donovan Smith's got his hand out. I'm not in a hurry to give Donovan Smith all that money. Sorry, Donovan. Turn that music down and turn your play up a little bit. He's inconsistent. That's the word that the Bucks use for him, and he is inconsistent. Light's a tough case, you know. A ton of mistakes. I mean, but he's been here 5 years. You're going to make mistakes. He's made more than his share. But just when you're ready to close the book on the guy, he comes up with a Nassib. He comes up with a Whitehead as a late. Guy looks good.
Well, I got to be honest with Nassib. I know someone in the personnel department a couple years ago when Nassib came out of Penn State. I asked this person about Nassib. And this guy has always been forthright with me. And almost every one of his player evaluations has been dead on. And I mean dead on. And I asked him about Nassib coming out, and this guy said, Jag, which means just, in football terms, just a guy.
Just a guy.
Which, the guy that's telling me this information, Jag means we're not going to touch him, he's not going to do anything in the NFL. And here, Cleveland cuts him, and they couldn't wait to sign the guy. It's like, wait a minute, I thought your evaluation was a Jag on this guy. And then he goes on and performs, you know, the Bucks. Oh, by the way, have a shot of having 2 double-digit sack guys this year, an outside shot. And one of those guys outside of JPP is Nassib. And here's a guy the personnel department, the people in football operations, deemed a Jag coming out of college.
You know, Steve, you put your finger on it before where you said this is a very funky, complicated season for the Bucks. In other words, they didn't start 2-6, you know, and dig that early hole, and they never dug it out, and they couldn't play meaningful games. And this is a different type of year where they gave themselves a chance. Steve, this place was euphoric after the Eagles game. The defending champs, after going into New Orleans, we didn't know how good the Saints were. They turned out to be, you know, until last week, they were the best team in the league, and Breeze was the leading MVP candidate. and the Bucks won a shootout against Drew Brees. How often is that going to happen? But and yet, if you finish 8-8, some fans are going to say, "Oh, wait a minute! They went 5-1 down the stretch." But when you pull back and you look at the whole season, Steve, when you start 2-0 and you finish 8-8, it's hard to get excited.
Oh, I got another. You know, you're talking about Light, and it's a tough question about him. Here's another tough question. I have nothing against this guy. I like him. I love his passion. Love his fire. People say he's the Jameis of the defense, but the defense is playing better without him. Quan, am I out of bounds saying the defense is playing better without him?
Well, you love his passions, but he's not a finished product, Quan Alexander.
No, Lee's not out of line, but it's another way to look at all the players of, hey, well, what happens when you're not in there? It was another way to look at Jameis. It's what flummoxed this whole organization by, well, crap, Ryan Fitzpatrick goes in there, and now he's in the Hall of Fame. You know, it's a bizarre season, and that's why you pay these guys the big bucks to figure out the evaluations.
You know what gives Quan leverage, Steve, going into 2019? The fact that
he's got no leverage, Ira.
Beckwith didn't play, and so you don't know if you got a guy that can slide into middle linebacker like a Beckwith, who I think can.
But Lee just said
he
it
didn't
himself.
Play
they're playing
Beckwith.
They're playing better without Quan. So they got a guy out there now.
Yeah, Quan's got limited leverage because he's coming off the injury.
Are you saying that's part of the reason why they're playing better is that he's not in the lineup? I mean,
I think that's a fair question.
That's for the guys to really assess. It's a fair question, though, right now on this day. But here's interesting as far as assessment. Cutter mentioned this on his radio show as well, and it was really made your mind blow. It was a rare look inside how they evaluate players at $1. I haven't written it up yet, Ira, but Cutter talked about how after games, the position coaches grade the players, but Cutter doesn't, he just takes those grades with a grain of salt. And he said, usually the position player coaches are much harder on the players. Oh, your hips were turned this way or that was turned that way.
And they look for all the negative plays. All
and
the
he said they're harder by nature as a position coach. Cutter also evaluates every player, he said, and said he's more, while he looks at those things too, he's more production focused with his grades. And then Cutter said he gets the grades from the personnel department, from Light's team, who have graded every player in the game, and they look at all three. And he said, you have three different grades on three different players, and you know it's a process. And he said, you know, you have to be fair with players and realize that it's subjective and the draft is a crapshoot and blah, blah, blah. So
I think at the end, Cutter's got to trust his own eyes, Steve. He's the head coach.
That's why he's the head coach. But it's interesting to say that he doesn't just take George Warhop's O-line grade and say, oh, you know, geez, you know, he's got his own way, which I don't know if it's like that in every regime.
I could see a Buckner. It makes sense.
He'd be harsh on his guys.
Yeah, Buckner saying, you know.
Perfectionist.
You know, Bo Allen, you didn't do this. And, mm-hmm. and Golston, what are you doing on this play? By the way, I didn't mention this, but I think it's worth mentioning. It's another thing I've been harping about all year besides throwing five long balls. I watched JPP in the first quarter, the very first quarter. I saw him line up in three different spots.
Is that right?
I saw him line up at D tackle. I saw him line up at his usual right end. And I saw him line up at left end. I like that idea. Get your mismatches.
Yeah.
Don't let the O-line settle in. We know where this guy's going to be. I think that's a good move for Duffner.
So, like Light with, and I agree with you, that was Light's dream to have a move around. That was, that's what we saw.
All
training camp, exactly, yeah. Like this guy, Andrew Adams.
Adam Ant.
You know,
Quincy Adams.
Why is he better than what everybody else we've trotted out there? He had an exceptional day today. It's one game, but I don't know. It's just fascinating how this stuff works. And Light's not picking lineups. So if Adams should have been in, he's been here since September. You know, it's something
to look
at.
And you know, when Duffner and some other guys and Cutter tried to tell us from the podium, you know, 2-3 weeks ago when there was nothing going on with takeaways, nothing. And they had one interception in 10 games.
Yeah.
What's the one thing they said? And we you know what? We're so jaded. We're so jaded that they'd said, it's contagious. Mm-hmm. They come in bunches. We all raised our eyebrows. That's easy to say. We don't say. And look what's going on. Maybe there's a little truth to it.
Well, you know what? What's interesting, I talked to Minter, and obviously I talked to Duffner after the game. Duffner used a word that was very interesting, confidence. These guys are starting to get confident. His confidence is a big thing. I'm paraphrasing. I thought that was interesting. These guys are getting confident.
I wish Isbitz had a little more confidence in his writing. Yeah,
but you mean the signature on your checks?
I
Now, another, Minter told me something that was also kind of interesting.
You said you had something from Minter. Yeah.
He, you know, obviously he wasn't here all year. He came, what, about a month ago? And I asked him, I said, you know, you're kind of from the outside looking in. I'm not using that as a negative. I'm not saying it as a negative. But when you came here, this defense was atrocious. I mean, this team was on pace for NFL records for futility. I said, you know, what has changed? What did you see? Why are things changing? And he said when he came in here, he saw a bunch of guys that had a chip on their shoulder. I said, what do you mean by that? They weren't playing like that. He said, I saw guys, and now I'm putting words in his mouth, but he said, I saw guys that were embarrassed. He said he saw guys that knew they could play better. They weren't playing up to their potential, and they were hacked off about it. And I thought that was kind of interesting. That they, he said that they were motivated to prove to people that we're not garbage. We're not going to go down in history as being the worst in the NFL. Just thought that was kind of interesting.
Don't you think, Steve, I don't think this is a stretch. And we don't have the details, but we're going to get them. But, Steve, don't you think that Duffner has tweaked the scheme? He has changed some things. It's not just players playing better. I think some things have changed in terms of what they're doing.
Derek Brooks talked a little bit about that with you on Tampa 2. And, they're, you know, look, even if he didn't tweak the scheme,
he's not going to tear down the defense.
Even if he didn't tweak it, they're still making different decisions, and that's the biggest tweak you can do is putting guys in different positions to make it happen. Some of it, like Leslie has written, you know, almost accidentally. A guy gets hurt, new guy's in. Oh, he's got a different strength. We're adjusting. We're better. So who knows?
Here's something that's interesting. And I, by the way, our listeners, if you Twitter us things you see on TV during the games, please keep it up because we do have a TV feed, but it's almost impossible to see with the sunlight, the way they position the TVs here. So basically, we're relying on replays. We're relying on the Jumbotron and what we see on the field. And a lot of things happen on TV that are important that we don't see. One thing someone pointed out today, they Twittered us. He obviously watched the game from home. I assume from home, maybe the bar, I don't know. But he said every time the defense came off the field, they had a shot of Duffner talking to defensive line coach Buckner. Every time, after every possession, they were talking to each other. And this guy was pointing out, you obviously didn't see that when Smith was up in the press box.
You know, the Buckner influence is starting to show, Steve. We were wondering what was going on after, you know, 8, 9, 10 games. And now we're seeing a lot of production. You know, you got to think Buckner's a part of that.
Hey, Vinny Curry, as I said earlier, was really big on giving him a lot of credit for that and you know, just saying it needed to take time, and they love the continued energy. But I want to bring up a subject. It's food, Ira, and I know you're a big fan of food.
There we go.
I made
bananas foster for Ira.
I had some fun with this on Joe Bucks Fan right after the Carolina game, the first one. And Gerald McCoy talked in the locker room that week about, hey, you know what? I really think we haven't done it. I really think the defense needs to go out to dinner and talk and bond as a family. And you know, we need a dinner. We just haven't had a dinner. So I'm like, come on, man. And you know, if this dinner was so valuable, do it in August. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah,
call the Glazers, say we need a barbecue or something. I mean, but it was McCoy was painting a picture of we really need to. We haven't done it yet. We should get around to it. Maybe that's what we need was the implication. And I was just banging my head against the wall. So anyway, I gave it a little time. I didn't want to be a wise guy. And today I asked Javian Elliott about, I said, hey, you know, Gerald said he was taking everybody to dinner. Did that happen? And did that mean anything? And what was all that all about?
So it was the whole defense or the
D-line? The whole defense. He said, we need a defense dinner. And Javian Elliott proceeds to tell me, yeah, we went out to dinner. We did it twice. We went to Eddie V's. And
they go to Fleming's too?
Then the next week, that was before the Washington game, they went to Eddie V's, and then they went to Ruth's Chris, and McCoy paid for everybody.
I can't get the Chili's over here, Lee.
All right, Ira. So McCoy paid for the whole thing. I asked him afterwards, and he sort of downplayed
it. How many guys are we talking about, Steven?
The entire defense, full defense dinner, courtesy of Gerald McCoy, who said, the Glazers pay me well, and don't worry about how much the bill is when he was asked, not by me. I didn't care how much the bill
was. We're talking 20, 25 guys? This is what we're talking about?
Yeah.
25 guys?
Yeah, the defense. Yeah, sure.
Jeez.
And Javian Elliott seemed to think it really meant a lot for the guys to get more close and all the, you know, he said it's nice to bring in the newer players like that. You know, maybe the guys who weren't there all training camp. And do you think this kind of thing is just dinner or that kind of stuff can really make a difference?
Well, I'm a little peeved that he's not doing it to the media. We could use a little sprucing up around here, Lee. You know what? I'm going to trust McCoy's instincts on this, Lee. He's been doing this a long time. And if he feels that they needed a little more camaraderie, a little kinship. One of the guys was telling me today, oh no, I think McCoy mentioned it, Steve, when you were standing right there. When you're kind of playing for the guy next to you to do well, you know you've arrived as a team. You're starting to see that around here. I was talking to Bo Allen, and we were both kind of saying, like, it doesn't really matter who ends up with the sack as long as everybody's, you know, pass rushing as a group. That's Buckner's big thing. You hear it all the time. One guy can't get it done. And I think we've seen that in the last month. One week it's Nassib. One week it's most weeks it's Pierre Paul. McCoy has played very well the last couple of weeks. Once in a while you get Vinnie Curry thrown in at Vita Vea last week. It's really become a group effort. And who are we to pee on Gerald McCoy laying out all that kind of money? He wouldn't say how much it was, Steve, but you know that the liquor was flowing, too. These guys are not drinking the lemonade. You know that, too, right?
I don't know.
Not Miller Lights, either. Yeah.
I assume somebody said, Gerald, can we order drinks? And I'm sure he said, sure.
So. Eddie V has a well-stocked bar.
Oh, is that
There's
right?
No question about it.
All right, Levante David.
Good. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Injured, knee injury.
Heck of a game
comes
on
back.
Sunday.
He's the one who had the pass breakup that would pop the ball up for the first pick. Leads the team in solo tackles like a linebacker should.
Big sack.
All over the place. And gets his first sack since 2016.
That's a shame.
Which is unbelievable. His first full sack. He had a half earlier this year. What can you say about him? And how much better might this defense get if he can be, you know, out there and more stabilizing?
You know, what comes to my mind about Levante and maybe some other defensive players as well is less thinking. Levante's just out there, you know, good prep work during the week. They know what Carolina likes to do. He came up big on Sunday. Other than Adams, he might have been their best defensive player. Mm. And of course, the front four had a fantastic day. But, you know, games like this, guys, let's be honest, it reminds us of Levante David in was it 2013, 2012, whatever that was, when he was all over the stat sheet. And people said, you know, he's not Derrick Brooks, but he's, you know, in 5 years, he might be close. Yeah. And we were having those kind of conversations about Levante David. All over the field, tackles for losses everywhere. Steve, we haven't seen the tackles for losses. We haven't seen him in the backfield. Today, very active. It looks like he's thinking less, and that's always a good thing on defense. Always.
I wish you would think less, Ira. More reactions.
And play a little more defense.
And play a little more defense. Good win for the Bucs. It'll be very interesting to see how they approach this massive matchup with the Saints coming here. A lot riding on this game.
Revenge on the Saints' mind instead of the Buck mind going into a Carolina game.
Absolutely. You know, the Saints have to be watching this film thinking, oh, this isn't the same Bucks team that we racked through 40 points up on.
You know, Steve, the one thing that strikes me, Lee, going into this game against the Saints, we'll talk more about it in the Thursday podcast, but a lot of times this year I would say, hey, not a bad time to play so-and-so, this and that, like the Carolina this week, reeling three losses. This is not a good time to play the Saints. They lost.
Oh, bad time.
And two or three extra days.
Yep.
Lost on a Thursday night, extra time. Not a good time to play the Saints, Lee.
I'll
tell you what,
Bear.
The Bucs pull this one off, and they'll be solid underdogs, not three-point underdogs like they were against Carolina. They'll be seven-point underdogs, if not more, with the Saints coming to town off a loss. They pull this off, that's very impressive to sweep the Saints, if. It's a big if.
Yeah.
But if they could do that, boy, what a feather in Cutter's cap.
Well, you know what? Steve just said something about, you know, Saints have to be looking at Bucks tape and thinking, well, this is a different Bucks team. In the owners meeting in Orlando this spring, I asked Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron, I said, you know, the Bucks, when you played them the first time, you hammered them.
Yeah.
The second time, that was a really close game. It was nip and tuck. toward the end. I said, you know, a fourth down call that you had that was a penalty on the Bucks that cost that gave you a win. I said, what changed in that team? And Rivera looked right at me and he shook his head. He goes, typical Bucks. He goes, they always play better in the second half of the season.
And
so Steve, that was very interesting.
Steve, I don't know how much of the game you watched with the Saints in Dallas, but what jumps out at you? Fantastic effort by Rod Marinelli and his defensive players. Fantastic. Swarming to the ball by the Cowboys and a lot of pressure on Breeze, making him uncomfortable. Couldn't step up. What do we see today? Now, look, Cam Newton's not Drew Brees throwing the football. He never will be. You're talking about what I consider one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time in Drew Brees.
Chris Russo.
He might still be the leading MVP candidate.
Chris Russo?
Chris Russo. that's what they did to Cam Newton today. They didn't let him step up, throwing off the back foot. That's what you got to do against Drew Brees. Not easy. Not easy.
Well, Sage, what a wonderful way to end this podcast, because I completely disagree with you guys.
Why am I not shocked, Steven?
On this is the best time to face the Saints. Back-to-back road games. They might be questioning themselves a little bit.
Questioning themselves?
Yeah, they just got smacked around in Dallas.
They're 10-2, gentlemen.
They just got smacked around. They're not foolproof.
Question myself like that at 10-2.
I'll take the Saints on a back-to-back road game after a loss that might rattle them a little bit.
On the grass.
I believe they can wrap up the division title with a win against the Bucks, because they'll be 11-2, and Carolina can't get past 10 wins.
I'm not saying the Saints are going to lose to the Bucks, but I just think, hey, I'd rather them not be humming along. Let them stumble a little bit and come into my house. One thing that was mentioned to me
put
today.
Put your cojones behind it and pick the Bucks next week.
I don't know if I can go that far. Right. Let me say, I was even a little sick this morning knowing I picked the Bucks when I realized Grimes was out.
Yeah.
Carlton Davis.
And Davis as well. I was like, that's a rough combination. But hey, Sage, to wrap this thing up, somebody said to me here, since I'm all about who's the next coach next year, I'm hoping the Bucks pull off a miracle, but reality says otherwise. And you know what? The Saints still have yet to play Carolina this year. They still have two games left against the Panthers, which is interesting. But I was talking to somebody here from Carolina, and you know what? They've lost four in a row now. If they completely fall apart, Ron Rivera would be a hell of a coach for the Bucks. Keep Todd Monk in here with the offense and bring in Rivera.
Look at that. Look at Steve.
Knows the division. He's got a great way with players. He knows defense. It would be very interesting.
You know, they got a new owner. He doesn't have a lot of ties with Ron Rivera.
And that was the other part of the equation is, hey, new ownership. And
they got a hedge fund manager running that franchise
and,
right now.
And your guy, who you did you talk to your buddy, Marty Herney, the GM from the Panthers today?
I didn't see him. Was he in a press box? I didn't see him.
He was ducking you.
Yeah, he's ducking me. He's in the owner's suite over there, Herney. He's a former sports writer.
Yeah.
He belongs in a press box. Come on, Marty. You're better than that.